Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
どこいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ。どこにいるのかな。見えない。
こんな
ところ。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 23rd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 107. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
And Patrick Klepek, who just finished writing and publishing a pretty big story.
Yeah, let's say the tonal whiplash between playing the sunny and cheering Super Mario Odyssey slightly different than what I spent the last 12 hours with. Just tiny bit. Just a little different.
Well, you actually, like, we'll dig into that in a second, but, like, maybe we should actually just walk people through what like the weekend looked like for us as the story developed.
That's
kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, it actually goes back before the weekend.
It was Friday that we started getting
Thursday.
Messages?
It was Thursday or Friday. There was a couple of messages dropped into my inbox from I believe the first email came from the title of the not the email the author of the email. The sender was Neo Gaff is Dirty. And it was like a link, an image dump, like a very confusing, like serial killer, like string everywhere sort of thing. And I was kind of sifting through it, but I was in the middle of like, I'd spent like the better part of like a day and a half writing the South Park piece that went up on Friday afternoon. And so it was
right.
A lot of things come in my inbox and it's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'll get to that as I get through things. And, I had flagged it in our Discord as being like, this seems it came from a questionable source, so I don't even know if any of this is true. But like,
wait,
hey,
you don't think NeoGaff is dirty at whatever.com is
at NeoGaffIsDirty.com?
Yeah, exactly.
It was like sort of like flagged for like everyone else to be like, hey, if you see something about this, like give me a heads up, and then like if I don't get to it before then maybe we'll know if something's happening. And so Friday afternoon rolls around, I write the South Park piece, goes up, and I just was not something I had a chance to look into. And because the couple of emails I'd gotten, one of them was like a long screed about how I'm a bad person. And then with another link to one of these things, it was just like, it like didn't really tee me up to be like, time to go see what these people are upset about.
Yeah. Especially after writing that South Park piece, which was like, anytime that you write something that's like, here is my history with this thing, here are my complicated feelings, and also here's me dumping on a thing that lots of people like. Like, even though I'm pretty confident in my take on it, like, I know I'm pissing people off. Like,
well, and it's going to be one of those things where some people can come away thinking, like, well, you're telling me I'm a bad person if I like this thing, which is not obviously not the takeaway, but you end up getting people who mix up their own personal feelings with the thing you're criticizing, and then all of a sudden that takes you down a pretty nasty rabbit hole.
Totally.
So that happens, and then over the weekend,
also, there's a background there, too, that I think is worth mentioning, which is, like, whenever people start bringing up, so NeoGaff, I guess really broadly for people who don't know, NeoGaff is a very popular,
I guess up until like the last like 48 hours, but like up until, like this broke, I mean, NeoGaff was Reddit before Reddit was, you know, 4chan before, I mean, 4chan may have existed alongside.
Yeah.
But NeoGaff's been around in some form or another for 18 years. Like, it just goes back really, really far. Like, that's where, like, you know, EGM writers, like, used to, like, talk to each other. I mean, I will have a separate piece probably later this week that talks about, I mean, I owe my career to Gaff before it was NeoGaff. It used to be, the Gaff part is Gaming Age Forums. It was part of Gaming Age, which was one of the more seminal video game websites where folks like Mark McDonald and other people came up through. A lot of EGM editors came through Gaming Age. A lot of the people that went on to do like 1UP and stuff 1UP like that came. 1UP is Gaming Age, essentially like the proto 1UP. Like everything that 1UP became started from a lot of the writers at Gaming Age. And Gaming Age split into NeoGaff, and that's where the Neo part comes from. When gaming age got to a certain popularity that there were, like, both copyright issues where people were posting, like, scans and leaked screenshots and, like, different leaks and rumors would appear on the site, and there was, like, publisher pressure to delete threads. And this is such early days in, like, video game journalism. Like, there wasn't even really journalism at that point.
Yeah, it was, like, enthusiast press at best. It was mostly just, like, we are fans, we are consumers, here is new stuff coming out. Publishers, please give us, like, bad screenshots that we can include. Yeah.
So, like, a cease and desist
would
come through.
Or good bullshots.
Right, exactly. Yes. Lots of bullshots. So when a cease and desist or something like that came through, like, you took it seriously because it wasn't, that just was not the structure for a place like Gaming Age and wasn't the structure for a lot of enthusiast websites. But
there was flexibility if, perhaps, there was just a form that was not publishing as an outlet, as a publication.
And so that's where NeoGAF came from. I don't know the specifics on how legally it occurred. I know that the owner of Gaming Age, Jim Cordera, who was a good friend of mine a long time ago, hopefully you're doing well, Jim, if you're still out there. and I know some ads for Gaming Age run on NeoGAF. So again, I don't know the exact legal and financial, but essentially, like, NeoGAF became the ownership of Tyler Malka. I've never actually, till this moment, said his name out loud, so I'm going to hope that I got that right. Also known as Evil Lore on the internet. And he has people have feelings about him. Arrogant would be certainly a way of characterizing some of the way that he has talked over the years, but he was able to back that up because partially due to him and partially due to the people around him, and probably also partially because of circumstance, GAF became this incredible melting pot where you had lots of really hardcore enthusiast game fans, game developers, reporters. Like, it was just kind of, it felt like this exclusive club where things kind of flattened and it was all anonymous largely. But everyone got a chance to talk to one another, and it was this really cool place where, like, I had been told, this is probably less true now than it was back then, but there was a time where, like, major games were greenlit, major decisions were made based on the conversations that were happening at, not GAF, but NeoGAF. Like, it was at one point used as, like, before, like, we had as many metrics as we have now, before we have as many sort of sources for metrics and influence and response, GAF was essentially like the, what's the temperature of video game fans right now? And if GAF put their thumb down, I mean, then that was, like, used as a data point to make hugely consequential decisions.
Well, and it's hard to know how well GAF of that era represented gaming and gaming culture and gamers at large. But it's easy to think about it and, like, a few other key places as representing different types of gaming communities and people who were part of the gaming culture. Like, I think about, like, that era of, like, GAF and, like, the GameFAQ forums as being like a pretty clear divide between people who, like, liked games and wanted to talk about them at GameFAQs, and then, like, the things that were happening at NeoGAF to me as an outsider who was, like, not a journalist and was, like, interested in games was always like, all right, these people know a little bit more about the industry. They, like, everyone wants to know what NPD numbers are. Everyone wants to, like, everyone knows the name of designers and developers and like, who the chairman is of Sony or whatever, right? Like, that stuff, everyone there kind of prided themselves on being a little bit more, insider. Which I think ends up being, like, part of the story of NeoGAF that I think a lot of people ended up feeling, which is, like, this place kind of fucking sucks also.
You're right.
like, it felt like a boys' club. It felt, like, very consumer-driven, consumer-first, right? Like, which at the time felt almost progressive because it was like, no, we have consumer rights, and, like, if this game is broken, we're going to pass around screenshots, and we have people who, like, I remember going to NeoGAF years and years ago, like, in the Justin TV era, to find secret streams of unreleased games, or to find videos of glitches in games where the publisher was out saying, like, no, the game is great, and they're like, no, dog, like, look at all these videos that have been uploaded to Daily Motion. Like, it is bad. It looks bad. And so there was definitely at the time a sort of, like, you could kind of see the value of, like, almost consumer, like, advocacy and like, almost citizen journalism around games at the time. But I think in the last few years, you've seen this weird, like, two things have happened. On one hand, and this is this is kind of all where I wanted to get to, is like you have it becoming a place where you can go to see people get like get called names, and there's like a kind of a very aggressive insider culture of GAF, and like it's very hard to break into GAF. It always felt like, again, there's kind of a boys club atmosphere to it. But also around the time of Gamergate, GAF kind of pretty quickly was like, nah, this is bullshit. Like, I call bullshit. This is not about ethics and games journalism. Fuck off with this, like, misogyny. Fuck off with
a
this.
A lot faster than yes. any editorial places, yes. you know, places I worked for, places other places worked for. Like, yeah. there are, I don't, you know, I may in hindsight be giving them more credit than they were doing how fast it was, but it was assuredly faster than most people who were paid to do this decided this is bullshit. We're not going to entertain it. We're not going to do the two sidesism. And they didn't just, I mean, they just bans, locked threads. Like, it was very quickly. They just said, if you say the term Gamergate and you're not doing it in a way that is essentially suggesting this is all really terrible, that right. you're just not welcome here, which for, the complicated politics of a lot of places on the internet that, you know, claim to be progressive, that, you know, allowed NeoGAF, rightly so in some ways, to say, like, actually we're trying to do right by, you know, some measure of people, at least in regards to this very specific thing.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is because part of that response on Friday from us was like, all right, is this another time that, like, there's a secret 4chan op to take down Gamer or to take down NeoGAF?
Yeah.
Because that's the sort of thing that has happened multiple times. And it also, I think, speaks to the complicated relationship that you've seen from lots of people as the things that have gone on, as NeoGAF has started to tumble, in that on one hand, you have lots of people who are from marginalized communities saying, like, you know what? Fuck NeoGAF, actually. Like, I never felt safe there. And then you also have people from Gamergate saying, like, haha, we killed NeoGAF, which is not true. One.
NeoGAF killed NeoGAF.
Yeah, exactly. Like, shitty behavior from someone who is an ass, who presents like an asshole at the very least, is what kills NeoGAF here. And mods who stood up and walked away. And like the revelation that shouldn't have been a revelation that, as always, communities are only as strong as there are mods there to kind of do the heavy lifting, right? Like, the mods build that place, and without mods, like, it's all just going to go to shit instantly.
Danielle, I'm so curious, yeah. for before we get into the story and the allegations, what was your perspective of that website? Like, I feel I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you might have been one of those people that was kind of like, fuck that place.
Yeah, very much so. So I definitely it's a little bit funny to me with the timing, because on Friday night, one of the last things I did in Austin, if you remember this, at like 7 on Friday night, I was like, I just looked up from my computer with like a very disdainful look, and I was like, I made a mistake. I looked on GAF again. Because, like, to be completely clear, there are great threads on GAF. I don't want to, like, completely, you know, take a crap on all of it. I enjoyed OTs. Like, I enjoyed the sort of, you know, there's cumulative efforts of people who are actually putting together all the criticism on a game or something like that. That was cool. But our thread just, you know, I'm just going to say, a lot of people were very critical of how I host podcasts and present on podcasts, and it made me a little depressed. And it was stupid for me to go looking for, like, constructive criticism as opposed to just
people don't like me. I'm not sure I would call all that stuff constructive. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. Like,
You know, I had a very similar experience to you for the years I worked at Giant Bomb, where there's a very active I guess now it's all was, so I have to change my terms. Active thread about Giant Bomb. It was a Giant Bomb community thread, and they would, you know, discuss what went up on the site. And
hundreds of pages.
Whereas our page probably updates like a full page of comments every couple of weeks, this is like 10 pages a day, like, you know, easily when nothing's going on. And actually, it usually filled up the fastest when nothing was happening on the site and people were upset that nothing was on the site.
And it's so easy to just be like, I'm going to click it and see what they're saying.
Because you want validation, you want feedback. And so I would find myself going in there, and then all of a sudden, it would be the same as, you know, you, Danielle, where it'd be like, oh, well, Patrick's not... he's not funny like Vinny and Jeff are. And like, or like, oh, I had a pimple that day, and it's like, the fuck's wrong with that guy's face? It was like, what am I doing here? Like, this isn't, I don't feel good about this.
Vinny and I ended up having lots of conversations about it. Not only because of shit that, like, people would give me, because obviously people at Gav would give me lots of pretentious, lots of, like, Austin just wants to use big words, lots of calling out specific vocal tics. Patrick, I don't know if you've ever, if that's ever happened for you. Like, Danielle, like, when I talk about saying, like, we've been there, I fucking mean it. We're like,
no, I know. I know.
What's the one for you, Patrick? Do you remember what the one was?
Well, for one, this was actually fair, and a lot of podcasters work on this over time, is like getting rid of the word like
as of course.
Verbal tick. That one was fair. That's on me. That was just something I needed with time. But it was ostensibly. This word that Ryan Davis and I sort of stumbled upon, and then the both of us like used it a bunch of times, and he moved on, but it just like stuck with me in the same way that like does. Like, the reason a verbal tick exists is usually it becomes a crutch when you're halfway through formulating a thought and you need to buy time and you're just looking for a transition word. And that's what like functions as for a lot of people. And for whatever reason, probably because I was trying to desperately not say like, is that I then swapped in ostensibly because I was used, it was just a bullshit word I could use all the time. But then anytime I did that, it would just be, it would come up in not a fun, like, let's rib Patrick sort of way. It'd be like, what is this dope doing on this podcast with all these A-plus podcasters? Like, get this shitbag out of here. And it was like, it would actually really influence, like, how I felt about myself and my work. And what I needed to understand was, like, one, people should have a space where, like, the creators, they should be allowed to talk about my face if they want. Like, I'm not saying that that's okay. I'm not saying, like, I would say that. That's not, I don't want to go have those conversations about people.
Patrick,
you've got a great face.
Well, I finally went and got some cream, like, 6 months ago, and I really wish I had gotten that cream. I just put it off for a long time. Now my face is not clear.
If they had posted, hey, Patrick, there's some cream you can get for your face to make it a good face.
If it were constructive, it would be, and that's what I was looking for, because frankly, a lot of times in that thread, there was constructive criticism. Right. There was something I could actually take and say, oh, okay, you know what? Maybe I am just kind of going, yeah, or cackling too much. Like, I get it. Like, I want to get better at things. I want to improve. When my coach tells, you know, in wrestling or jiu-jitsu, when my coach is telling me, no, you're doing something wrong, like, good, yes, please tell me what I'm doing wrong. I would like to fix it, but in the last couple of months, it was just turned to a lot of, like, vaguely sexist, like, you know, like, pitting me against the other woman on the team kind of thing. Or, you know, just shit that's just not shit. Useful. And that's, you know?
That stuff is why I think for a lot of people that Gaff never felt, not safe even, but just, like, never felt good. It just never felt good to be there, is because there were certain attitudes that reflected, like, a sort of old-fashioned, like, cultural, like, company culture almost, right? Like, there is such a thing as a forum culture in terms of, like, what jokes fly, what ones don't, what reads as constructive criticism and what doesn't. And what I ended up doing is the same thing that you did, Patrick, which is, like, you have to at some point say, and this was from, you know, Vinny talking to me over at Giant Bomb, was, like, there needs to be a place where people can talk about your work and you the way that they talk about movie stars, the way that they talk about rock musicians, the way that they talk about politicians. And, like, it is weird to think of that because you're an individual who does not have the degree of celebrity and stability that, say,
or
a
the
movie
bank
star
account
has. That's what I mean.
See, that's,
yeah, exactly.
That's where
exactly.
I'm going to push back. They can afford a lot of therapy. Like, they can afford.
I talked to my friend and friends at the table, you know, co-star Art about it, and a phrase that he often uses is like, man, that's what the money is for. And
exactly.
But we don't have that. Like, we're out in the public, but we are not public figures in the sense that we have huge bank accounts. But that definitely gave us, I think, a very specific relationship with Gaff. Because you get this view of both sides of, like, in fact, you get this view of Gaff as almost being like, pardon Gaff, but like a very centrist position where the people over at a very centrist place where the people in Gamergate are like, yo, fuck Gaff. And then, like, the people who are like, who are targeted by Gamergate are also sometimes like, yo, fuck Gaff. And so it was funny to see over the weekend as the story developed, those attitudes kind of bubbling up. And then the sort of like, also alongside of it, people saying like, I will never go to Gaff in my life. Also, I wouldn't be here without Gaff, because when I was 16, when I was 20, as a reporter, I, you know, go to Gaff every day to read the thread, but I'll never have an account there because it's just like gross or whatever. And so it's been interesting to see everybody come out and kind of present their perspectives. In any case.
Yeah.
All of that is to say why we didn't just jump on those tips immediately. Yeah. Also, it was Friday afternoon. Everyone's tired. And it's like, okay, this is going to be another thing that slowly happens over the course of the next week. Like, we have time to go talk to people, to look into these allegations, to report on it slowly. Because that's normally what happens, right? Like, you're able to, like, send out an email over the weekend and see, like, oh, hey, do you have time to speak on Monday? Okay, we'll set up a call. And then Saturday, I feel like, Patrick, I sent you a text. Was it Saturday?
So Saturday, I mentioned this the podcast a week ago, because I wasn't on Friday's cast, right. Which was very good, by the way. Side note, if you haven't,
thank you.
I'm sure most people have listened to the interview you guys did with Manveer.
Shout out to Manveer.
Manveer is amazing.
But yeah, like, I remember mentioning last week that, like, I, you know, like, in fairly recent months have, like, tried to set aside weekends as, like, a place where, like, I'm just with my kid and my family and, like, the things that make me happy. Just because I've spent a lot of time writing about, like, weird shit and dark stuff in the last, like, 6 months. And so it's like, I just need, like, a space to have that stuff happen. But, my wife went to bed pretty early on Saturday, and then I was sitting there playing Mario and I'm, like, checking Twitter, and then all of a sudden I started seeing all this stuff happening, getting passed around, and getting a lot of mentions. But again, a lot of those mentions were coming from clearly people with, like, disingenuous motives, in which they were very much a part of this thread that we alluded to earlier, in which, like, the reason they wanted Tyler Malka to be found to be, you know, a monster, or the allegations to prove true, is not because they actually want justice for the woman who was making the allegations. Right. They just wanted what was seen as anti-Gamergate or a progressive beacon, which I don't use that as a term because I think it was, I'm just saying that, like, relative to Gamergate, it was viewed that way because of the stances they were taking.
We're going to just take a quick break for an ad. We will be right back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
They wanted to just see it taken down because it contributes to something that happens a lot in alt-right circles and a lot of these subversive circles, in which their goals are really just to create infighting amongst progressives, liberals, people on the left. And so taking out figures of the left, and this is why they've reveled so much in the Harvey Weinstein stuff, contributes to that cause, because chaos equals advancement of the cause, even if that cause has no actual end. So I saw that, but then started hearing from people that I knew, I heard from you, who, you know, you pay a little more attention to that stuff on the weekend. It was like, okay, like, something's going on here.
Well, at that point, Gaff all through Saturday evening was just, like, up and down over and over. It was getting DDoSed or something was happening. It wasn't very clear.
Well, specifically, then I saw screenshots of a thread where someone – you know what? This starts because it must have been on Friday afternoon, and this is how this thread stayed with me, and then people were updating me through this thread, was there was a bot that I followed on Twitter that's like NeoGaff new thread, and it's just in my gaming column. Right. It's part of what I use to just keep track of what people are doing, and it said the account, or the thread was called, this is probably account suicide, ... And I immediately clicked. I was like, God, I don't know what the fuck's in this thread. And it was gone. The bot is automated, you know, like this. So that thread was deleted almost instantaneously. And then what happened was, over the weekend, people started replying to that, like, thread with, like, screenshots and clearer sets of allegations. And that's what got, like, you, me, and other people starting to look at this as though, okay, this seems like this has gone beyond the threshold, like, regardless of the shitty actors participating, that does not mean this isn't necessarily a story that deserves or doesn't deserve our full attention, which is that then. So Saturday evening, like, I'm trying to play Mario, and eventually just gave up. Like, I just, like, I was texting with someone, I was just like, I am so crushed right now that I can't even enjoy Mario Odyssey, so I'm just going to put on The Strangers and send emails and just sit on this couch until I fall asleep, which is what happened at around 11:15. And started sending emails. Like, I put out a, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a large following on Twitter where I can just sort of ask for help, and people are very thankfully often come forward with information that can kind of help me wrap my head around complicated stories. And so I guess to set up what actually got us to start thinking about this and investigating it, there was an allegation made on Facebook. It was not a public post. It was not like, right. I'm going on medium.com and I'm going to write a call-out post for Tyler Melka. This was
a private communication from a woman who was joining in the hashtag MeToo social media
on
thing.
Facebook, on Twitter, right? It's not like she had a Twitter account that has like 10 followers and it's just her friends. Like, it's a private Facebook account, which this woman, Emily Up, wrote a told the story about her and what was referred to as a friend who went on a road trip to New Orleans. And then she goes from there to you know, we won't do the whole back and forth. If you want to read the story and hear the entire thing, I'll just kind of give the setup for her allegations, and then I will just tell you that the story then interrogates those allegations, and we can talk about them here, but we don't need to do the whole he said, she said on the podcast. But so Liep had gone on this trip with Tyler. She was polyamorous. Is that how you pronounce that? And in an open relationship, but she had a boyfriend, and the open part of her relationship was with women. And so she was in a committed sort of thing at the moment with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend had met Tyler, and they were all cool. You know, like, it was like, oh, hey, this is just a friend. You guys can go on a road trip. Like, go have fun. And so Tyler and Emma go on this road trip to New Orleans. They had known each other from becoming friends over the years, and Tyler had been he'd been like an actor in some of her video shoots. She's a director that does work down in Texas, so like they were close in a friend sort of way, and in a lot of like, you know, relationships that I'm sure we all have with people of both genders. They go to New Orleans. They have a lot to drink. She has too much to drink, and then gets sick, goes into the bathroom. She's vomiting. Like, you're not just like, oh, I don't feel well. Like, throwing up into this bathroom. And she then goes into the shower to sort of clean herself up. And she alleges that Tyler then entered into the bathroom, entered into the shower fully naked, and approached her from behind. Didn't, like, you know, give a playful heads up or like, hey, is it okay if I come in? And she immediately tells him, like, this isn't outside of just the surface level of like, who wants to go initiate sex with someone who is clearly puking, going into the beginning of a hangover?
That is not a good look. Even, let me be honest, if I had a partner who was in the bathroom puking, I wouldn't be like, I might be in there like holding hair back,
exactly,
or like with a bucket and a mop, like, but it's not time to make a move, my guy, not at all.
She tells him, like, you know, this is inappropriate, and he leaves, nothing, you know, untoward happens after that. It was obviously a very like creepy, strange maneuver. They have a talk about it the next day, which is that, hey, this was inappropriate, you know, you can't act this way, like, we don't have this kind of relationship, like, we are friends, and if I was gonna have sex with anyone, it's gonna be my boyfriend or a woman
someone
of my
else.
choosing,
based
on how her relationship was set up at the time. And from her, you know, I interviewed her earlier this morning, and, you know, from her perspective, like, he took to that, and she's like, I work in not Hollywood, but, you know, she works in film and deals with a lot of awkward and weird people and internet friends. And she said, that's not an excuse, but she's like, sometimes there are instances in which people are drunk, do something inappropriate, and then when they are told, they realize the error of their ways and maybe they learn something from it. Right. And her thought was that was this situation, that, like, I have no reason to trust Tyler for all the – she was helping him – or helping her network for her film company. And it just – she thought, like, this was a teachable moment. Nothing went way too far, and we're just going to move forward from here.
Right. Oh, this is like one of the things that's so frustrating with the response to stories like this often is you have people who say like, well, why did she even keep talking to him? And it's like, if she didn't, you'd be saying, oh, everybody deserves a second chance. He was just drunk. Like,
right.
You can't have it both ways. Like, she did what was a very generous thing in saying like, all right, I'm going to walk you through why you fucked up. And allegedly this is her side of the story. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in her version of the story, like, then did the next step, which was like, all right, like, as long as we're cool, like, we're gonna keep hanging out, and we're gonna finish this trip, and maybe I'll see you some other time too. Like, I think that part of the story, as she tells it, like, completely holds up with the sorts of stories that I have, you know, that are common among my friends, among like the other women I know who've dealt with this. Like, this does not seem out of character, you know, in our generation.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely true. And so they did. She cites this incident in which she felt profoundly guilty. It's very common in what I've read about instances of sexual misconduct and my own interviews and reporting I've done that where she felt guilty and as though she had brought that on in some way. Is a feeling that she was going through after the incident occurred, and when she realized that if she told her boyfriend, she didn't feel the confidence to actually tell her boyfriend what happened because she was afraid of how it looked upon her. She felt like that said something about her and her relationship, so it kind of led directly to the dissolution of that relationship because of her complicated feelings for how she felt about her own participation or non-participation in the events that occurred. And so they did have consensual sex later. That was, you know, something where she it's not in the story, but described to me that she didn't feel great about it, but it was not something in which he did anything untoward. She had broken up with her boyfriend and they were still friends. You know, this was part of the second chance thing, and that stuff happens. I think if you were to have a talk with any of your friends who are women, I think you would hear all sorts of like weird, confusing sort of situations that arise out of complicated relationships like this. But then they meet up again in E3, where Tyler had booked an Airbnb for both his friends and for her to come down. They were sharing a bed because they were close friends, but at that point they, at least in Ema's telling of the story, had... it was a platonic sort of thing. They were just friends. They were in the bed together because it was an Airbnb and people were sleeping where they could sleep. You know, it was just, you know, that,
right.
Some X amount of space. And Tyler portrays it very differently. And like, without getting into the, you know, he said, she said of the rest of the event, like suffice to say that her interpretation of events that involve another woman, her perspective is that she was protecting or raising warnings about the actions that Tyler was taking that seemed to involve trying to get a woman drunk and being a little handsy and raising objections over that because she had seen some of that happen to her and it was very uncomfortable for her to watch that to happen to someone else. Mm-hmm. Tyler's interpretation of that was in a series of statements to me that I genuinely were shocked to get.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, Tyler only talked to me. Maybe because I have a history with the website,
right.
Or the forum, I don't know. But certainly before any sort of public statement was made on social media or on NeoGAF itself, spins the whole tale as sort of like a soap opera in which it's a lover's triangle and very directly pins any sort of reactions from Ema as being a result of her mental illness,
quote unquote. That is his.
Yes, yes. Yep. That is his phrasing. Up to and including evidence that of her mental illness because she deleted the Facebook post in which she made the original allegations, which is not true. It's that once they went viral, her profile was getting bombarded and shared all over the place, and that was just one of several posts she had made.
Right.
In participation of the Me Too campaign in which people were raising awareness about sort of everyday sexual misconduct. And she didn't need a bunch of strangers screenshotting her sexual history.
Right.
She didn't need a reporter like myself or Cecilia over at Kotaku talking to her about her like sexual – like the idea that I just said a couple of minutes ago. And then she had consensual sex with this man. Like in no world really should I be having to say those words, know those words, know
that
history.
That's not knowledge that you need to have in your life. That is a thing that she did in her life. But like, as a reporter, you had to get the complicated details of this person's day. Like, she has to go to work tomorrow, presumably. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't stop existing outside of the frame of the story.
Yes. And, you know, and then she, you know, part of the reason she said she spoke with me was specifically because I had reached out to her. At that point, I believe she had talked to Cecilia at Kotaku, and I couldn't have blamed her. She never got back to me. But then I got these really fascinating, I guess is the word, responses from Tyler. And I passed them on to her because I couldn't in good conscience. I needed to impress upon her, not that I needed her to speak with me, but that the absence of her considering out in the open, if it just would have been Tyler being able to say, oh, when she's mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like that's something that I think anyone can feel an understanding of why they would feel a need to respond to that. And so that's
like, especially when the, you know, it is two stories and we are not in a position to, because we are journalists, because we are speaking as a publication and not as private individuals, like there are legal repercussions for us saying what we think happened or didn't happen, which is like, if you're wondering why we're hedging, it is because our legal team has impressed that upon us in the past. And it's a bummer to get pulled into a legal office and chided. But the thing that I will say is that, like, just looking at their statements, the fact that hers is like, okay, here's the thing he fucked up and did, and then the next day we talked about it and like tried to move on from there, versus like, oh, she's mentally ill, is it immediately starts painting a picture. And that picture only gets like clearer for me in terms of how Tyler presents and speaks and writes and tries to lead the team at NeoGAF as you dig deeper. Deeper into Tyler's past history online, previous accusations made against him, which kind of continued to dig up as things progressed over the weekend, and again, you just see this like this image of someone who has a very different understanding of consent than I do, and than I think a lot of people do, and who, in general, just like makes these very extreme claims that center himself as a targeted victim and rarely address the notion that
the world around me is wrong.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, not because I did anything.
I think there were three red flags there for me just reading the piece. Again, I don't know anything that you don't know, of course.
Right.
But the fact first that he would blame something on mental illness, which has been the dog whistle for all time, sort of discrediting women when they make accusations, discrediting women when they say something has happened. Right. That is sort of the oldest trick in the book, basically.
She's hysterical.
She's hysterical. Exactly. The term hysteria, like in itself, right?
Right.
Absolutely is like, oh, don't believe women with their weird women problems. That's the whole, you know, that's the idea behind it. Second thing being, of course, the sort of attitude presented, and the third thing being absolutely which I'm sure we'll get into it now, but sort of that screen grab that shows the way he's talked about previous accusations, the way he's talked about consent, the way he's talked about, I don't ask girls to kiss them because I don't have a pocket protector. Like this idea that having an idea of affirmative consent, you know, consent where you actually ask a person if something is okay, that's for nerds, that's for losers. Like it's that absolutely to me was like, yep, red flag right there. That is terrifying. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that came up through a series of posts that had arrived via, like, people had started sending those around again. They're from 2012, right, Patrick? The sort of blog that he'd made of traveling across Europe and a number of encounters he had there that were almost all, like, not always. I didn't read the entire collection, but the collection of screen grabs that you saw and that he commented on and confirmed that those were posts that he made. To be clear, these are not just like doctored screen grabs that are floating around.
And he responds like in the piece, like responds to the like it confirms their existence, even though GAF is down right now. Yeah. Because he responded specifically to my question of like, well, you got to admit this looks pretty bad. When put against these two.
It's just like his like sexual dominance. And I don't just mean that like literally in the bedroom, but like in terms of his behavior at clubs, his behavior around women in public. There's a specific story that he tells that involves a woman asking him to buy her a drink and then touching her butt because he wanted to make it clear that this was going to be like a tit for tat relationship and not just like, God. Oh yeah, you can push me around. You can take it. You can quote unquote take advantage of me. And in like the explanation he gave you for that, the tone just shifts so dramatically from like, and that's how I treat people. I let them know that I'm in charge to like, oh, you know, it was very playful. She had already been sitting on my lap. Like, this was a very, like, fun exchange. Like, and it is.
Even if that's true, right? It's like the reason, the way he wrote it originally.
Yes.
Reflects a certain attitude to how you want to present around men. Because that's largely what, you know, NeoGAF is young white males. And so it's like you can – like two things can be true. Like he could have exaggerated that story because he wanted to look cool and that actually what was happening was the story he tells me.
Right.
But even if you were to take that at face value and give him that credit, like what it says about him and his views on consent and how to treat women when he writes his experience that way because he wants to be seen in a certain light still says something deeply troubling about like – the way society like rewards certain types of male behavior among women.
Right, exactly. Which is still a red flag, right? Like, yes. I don't know. It is so hard because when you tell a story like this, when you report a story like this, you get so into the nitty gritty that it ends up being, you don't want to just present like a he said, she said. But at the same time, there is value in letting, in working out a way to present comprehensive or holistic picture of what these positions are so that readers can make a knowledgeable judgment, especially in a situation like this where this wasn't a person. He is not just like we've dealt with stories in the past where someone will have said like some really truly bigoted shit, and then what we have to then say is like, okay, do we want those words even to be on our platform? There's a story. Who knows if it will ever finish, or we've been in like edits.
The idea that this story published in 12 hours and this other story that we're quietly alluding to and that we'll explain at a later date,
is still
in the mix.
Speaks to there are times when we've been like, okay, hey, this other story is not a thing that we want to pursue right now, or like, oh, hey, this person is like not just like homophobic, but virulently homophobic, or like not just to the degree that like it's not just like we want them to we don't want to just give them enough rope, as people often say, right? Like, right. So that like, okay, the reader will be able to read that this person said some shitty stuff, and so we'll let them kind of hang themselves in the public sphere by saying something shitty, and everyone goes like, whoa, that's terrible. There are things that are so bad that it's like, I'm not here to boost this, but this isn't that. Right? This is like, this person has a specific allegation made against them, and it is totally within rights for him to say like, no, that's not what happened. But instead, what he fucking said was, no, actually, she's mentally ill. And it's like, oh my God, no, like, this is not a great line of defense when it does what Danielle said, which is like, exists inside of this continuity of men doing that again and again and again, instead of saying a million other things that he could have said here. And the thing is that, like, it's weird because we're in this place where the quote unquote bigger story is this the end of GAF? But that minimizes and reduces this woman's experience so dramatically.
Yeah.
And I'm always cautious of doing the same thing that I would critique the people at Gamergate and similar, you know, in similar groups, similar organizations who wanted to use her, this encounter that she had, this sexual misconduct that she faced as a pawn, as like a tactical event that they could, seize upon and like use to wound one of their targets, in NeoGAF. I'm cautious about doing the same thing and being like, okay, well, now that we've talked about this, sexual misconduct, sexual misconduct allegation. Now we can get to the real story, which is NeoGAF. So I want to be clear that that's like not I, the real story is that like millions of women, hundreds of millions of women, billions of women suffer sexual misconduct, sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and that like we are in the middle of a bunch of those stories being told right now. We need to keep telling those stories. We need to keep reporting those stories. We need to keep like chasing down those stories as best we can. A thing that we didn't do a couple of weeks ago when we told this story about when we talked about the Naughty Dog allegations was that we didn't give any resources for what to do if you've suffered sexual harassment, sexual misconduct in any way at a workplace or anywhere else. This is me reminding myself that when we publish this podcast today, it should include links out to resources.
We can, I think, an easy one to kind of go to and one that I've vetted quite a bit, at least at, on some level, would be RAIN. That's kind of a pretty easy one for people. It's RAIN. Of course, you want me to read the mission statement? I got it right here.
Sure.
RAIN, which stands for Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, which, by the way, they also do a lot, everything in the full spectrum of sexual misconduct. So they deal with harassment as well as rape, incest, and misconduct in general. So it's the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. RAIN created and operates the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is 800-656-HOPE, and also it's online.rain.org and rain.org/ES, in partnership with more than 1,000 local sexual assault service providers across the country. There's also a DOD safe helpline. There are special resources for LGBT people. There are special resources for people in the military. They have a lot of resources on their site, so they are a good place to go to for that. And I would just say this as someone who has been sexually harassed and been assaulted even at work, that there can be a lot of guilt. And I'm not speaking at all about this specific woman, but there can be a certain kind of guilt in telling your story when you feel like your story isn't as bad as some other people's stories. Mm-hmm. Like I know a lot of people who are survivors of extremely brutal sexual assault and rape, and feeling like, oh, you know, if I was groped or certain things or, you know, a situation where, you know, something really not okay happened, but, you know, I'm okay physically, tell folks to get help even in those other situations, because it can really mess with your head in a lot of ways. Right. So those, don't hesitate.
Right. Don't hesitate to get help. And at the same time, I also think it's probably worth saying in the midst of all of this Me Too campaign, like I am, you know, obviously and maybe not obviously, maybe it's worth saying that I am impressed and thankful to any woman who anyone who is willing to share their story about being sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, but also that like I also have a lot of sympathy for the people who are like, I'm actually not in a place where I want to be confront my trauma.
Absolutely.
Or where my trauma should become a teaching tool for like dudes who for whatever reason can't just take it at you know, at word that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. So a lot of sympathy for folks who are not in a place where they want to dig into this for whatever reason. So if you're one of those people, please, you know that as far as I'm concerned, you know, as far as my word goes, as far as my opinion goes, like no judgment on you for not wanting to pick up the weight of like using your personal trauma as a teaching tool. So
absolutely. And there are ways you can get help with it being completely anonymous and not having to tell anybody that you know in your life. That's also right. What help hotlines are for. It's a way that you can potentially get some kind of help with it without ever having to tell anyone in your life or have that risk associated
right.
with it.
Totally. So, like, clear, like, I think that is the heart of this and is, especially in this year where more and more of these stories come out, like, that is the thing I wanted to spend some time on there. I am curious, like, what does this mean for GAF going forward? Or more importantly, what does this mean for communities inside of gaming on the internet going forward? Like, what fills this gap? Does it come back? Like, I mean, Tyler seemed to, you know, Malka seemed to tell you that his plan is to bring GAF back ASAP.
Well, yeah, there's a right, like literally, you know, right before
seconds
I published
before.
On the story.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, seconds before I got a response to a story or for a question I sent him last night in which I was like, what's the next step here. Before I forget, I just want to make one aside because I thought of this before and I don't want to forget it again.
Yep.
When we mentioned that there were allegations from 2012, like, I want to make it clear, I had no idea that there were allegations from 2012. Yeah, yeah. I also don't want to say that necessarily there would have been the kind of reporting done from outlets like ourselves or Kotaku. I think a lot has changed in the last 5 years. Not that it shouldn't have been taken seriously. Not that it wasn't as unsettling then as it is now. But I think, you know, I think there's a big difference in the way we think about and talk about and report about this stuff in the last 5 years. And so I can say that I didn't know, but I can't necessarily say that I would have taken it as seriously, because I think my own like way of looking at this, like my own weight I put into the time I spend on reporting things, like, has changed in a way that like shows meaningful progress in how we talk and report and support, you know, the idea of like believing women when they they come forward. So I just wanted to make that, because there some people come out, it's like, oh, reporters have been protecting him for 5 years, and it's like, I have no reason to protect the owner of NeoGAF. but I also think there is something to be said about the way we talk about this stuff that has changed, especially post Harvey Weinstein. But definitely in the last 5 years, I think there has been a substantial shift in just the seriousness that is taken of reporting on things like this. So that aside, Tyler had mentioned that the plan was for the site was back online after being, was it DDoSed? Is that how you say that?
Yeah, that's how I always say it.
DDoSed? So. Pretty much all weekend. So the site is back up in the sense that it says it's under maintenance. Tyler had told me that it'll be up with posting again in some form later tonight. He's mentioned that he was worried that it would be DDoSed again, so who knows how long that'll last. My guess is that GAF will probably be dealing with that for a while. Yeah. More interestingly, said that the solution to this problem, which was not to make a public statement about what happened, was not to do something other than answer reporters' emails. Like, look, I love getting answers to my questions, but if I was a consultant for this, I would have said, don't be talking to reporters. You should be talking to your community and engaging with them. Like, that's – anyway. He mentioned that his solution to this, or at least the approach going forward, is that shit is just so complicated and politically charged in 2017 that they just need to refocus on video games.
Oh, just gotta get back to gaming.
God.
What matters, what really matters.
Which is a really just strange, like, way to view that, which is not to, like double down. Like, look, like I'm going to reexamine my own behavior. We're going to, like, come up with new policies that, like, you know, like...
Yep.
But instead it's like, oh, actually, like, the shit that got... To bring this stuff up, like fucking politics and like gender studies, like, I get that shit off the forum.
Well, that's part of the other thing, too, is like part of his behavior as the owner of NeoGAF
is being a bad one, is slow, bad. Is unresponsive, is not real, yes. Is like being aloof. Like, the thing that is at the end of my story is like telling a little bit about what happened with the modders, you know, the people that supported and essentially have ran NeoGAF for a while Tyler has largely just been the financial benefactor of what's happened on the site. We didn't get into this, but it's like, you know, earlier this year, like Amarox, who was a notable mod for a number of years, who was very active, if you, like me, were in a lot of the political threads in the off-topic forums of Gaming Age, or of GAF, and he was as liberal firebrand as you come, and then he was charged with a number of accounts of having child pornography.
Right.
Tyler's official statement, which came very late after people had connected the dots, was that, oh, we didn't know what his real name was, which a number of mods told me was complete horseshit.
Right.
And that they did know, and that the statement that GAF put out essentially like shifted the blame to like moderators for not doing their job enough to like know it was like it set up this situation where I think part of the reason, or I know part of the reason, the people like the modders, this sort of support structure of the NeoGAF hierarchy, the reason they distanced themselves so fast, the reason they just quit, was because, like, why should we stand by with this guy a second time? Like, he kind of screwed us the first time, where we needed to become like, look, like, there are always going to be instances where people who you think are good end up being awful people.
Yep.
And you can't necessarily know that, but that you still got to come clean about what you knew, when you knew it, what you're doing in the future to try and discourage it or whatever. Like that, those are the steps you're supposed to take, not be like, eh, like, I don't know, didn't know the guy's name. Like, just come up with a bunch of sort of like bullshit reasons to hand wave it away. And so I think that's why you saw essentially a parade away from the site over the weekend from the people in the power hierarchy, because they said, like, this doesn't seem like the kind of person that's going to have our back. And so while they weren't going to sit around and wait to see what evidence or proof or whatever, how all that stuff played out, I think there was a lack of faith in the very person who was supposed to be the one, like the leader of that place. And it, by all accounts, seemed to have failed the people below him. Yep. And I think, the fact that he only responded to my emails, the fact that there is no public statement yet, I think speaks to that sort of haphazard, inconsistent leadership that, like I said, like as someone that, you know, took this incredibly seriously, reported it out, because that was as much as my gut reaction was like, ah, shit, I check NeoGAF any morning. Like, I don't know what's going on in the world right now.
Right, because that place, you went to go check for the post.
Yeah, when I posted my story, I was like, I wonder what NeoGAF thinks of my story. Just having the mental disconnect, because on my bookmark bar in my Chrome browser, like, one of the ones in the center is GAF. One of the icons on the homepage of my phone is GAF. Like, I owe my career to GAF. I owe a lot of the internet relationships I have to, like, dear friends of mine to that place. And so I have, like, super complicated feelings about, like, the death of a community, which is something we can maybe think about and talk about later. I want distance from this. I don't want to do what you said, which is, like, to immediately pivot to, like, so what does this mean for GAF? But I do think that Tyler is not necessarily speaking as someone that was part of that community, separate from my own reporting, that does not seem like the way forward. The way forward was probably for him to divest his financial interest in NeoGAF, to hand it off to someone else. And maybe that would have been a world in which you could have saved the name from being permanently tainted.
Right.
But by all accounts, it seems like I think NeoGAF is probably just going to die a slow death.
And my hope is that, like, the communities that come up in its wake are going to do the opposite of what it sounds like Tyler wants to do with GAF, right? Which is, like, realize that you can't just be a space that is just pro gaming and that is it. That for, like, a mature space for people to talk about games and to only talk about games if that's what they want. If someone who wants to only talk about games can go to a place where they just want to talk about, you know, OT, Super Mario Odyssey, I just want a dope thread that it, like, looks really cool up top. There's a bunch of screenshots and GIFs that is, like, look at how pretty this game is, and they just want to go to that thread, that is a thing that they can do, but that for a healthy community to exist these days, like, it has to be a space where you can also talk about what happens when there are sexual assault or sexual misconduct allegations that happen to somebody, you know, or alleged against someone in the gaming community, a place where you can talk about politics, a place where you can talk about culture and art and about, you know, everything else that is not just gaming, because that will make those conversations that are about gaming so much more fruitful and so much more honest and so much more, you know, again, holistic. Those are the sorts of communities that I hope show up in the wake of all of this. And, you know, shout outs immediately to our incredible mods over at the Waypoint Forums, who have done an incredible amount of work. There has been a bit of an exodus from NeoGAF and to a number of forums on the internet that have already existed. I know Giant Bomb had a big intake. We had something like 1,000 new members overnight on the Waypoint forums. So thank you to our incredible mod team who, like, really put in the hard work of making sure that new audience understood the difference between NeoGAF and the Waypoint forums, because there are key differences. Like, there really truly are. And shout outs to our Discord mods also, who, you know, less of an intake, I believe, of new users on the Discord, but still a pretty heavy one. And so to them also, shout outs and thank you for putting in the hard work.
Come join my new channel, The Lament Configuration, where we talk about shitty horror movies. I started a channel.
Wait, did you?
Nice!
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick. Have you been in there? Are you talking about
stuff? Yeah, I've been in there. I'm talking about bad movies.
Oh, I gotta add this in. I love bad movies. How do I do this if I'm a Discord...
You're here already.
Discord challenged.
Or is this a bit? Are you doing like a...
if I'm having a Discord problem...
Danielle, you're in this chat room already. I can see you here.
Yeah.
If you know what the Lament configuration is, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You got to figure it out for yourself.
Is that a Hellraiser thing?
Yeah, it is. Fuck, that was quick. God damn it.
God, I got it. Listen, I'm not a big horror movie buff. I'm on the outside of horror film in the margins. I watch what comes on here or there. I actually realized this very recently. I went to go see Annabelle Origins.
Forgive me, Father. Of course. Forgive
Annabelle
me, Father.
Creation, please.
Oh, sorry, Creation. Annabelle Creation 2. I realize that my relationship with horror films has completely changed because I spent as a kid I was terrified of horror films and would not watch them. I refused very much of the belief that Freddy Krueger was going to kill me and that those films were documentaries or that they at the very least spoke to a real fear. And then as I got older and my fears shifted from being men who had burned faces and knife hands to just men what wore masks and hurt people or just small towns or getting lost in the woods and a bear kills you, adult fears. I started being able to watch horror movies again. I didn't even realize it really until recently, but now I have this very detached I like the craft of a horror film, even a schlocky one, in a way I didn't before. I still can't just watch a bunch of them in a row. I still have to be in the right mood or with the right people. But I get it now, and it makes me. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole necessarily, but it's nice to be in a place now where I'm if I was hanging out with a friend and they had Hellraiser 3 on or whatever, I'd watch that.
Yeah, the one that's a CD face man where the dude. Shoots CDs out of his mouth.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, yep. Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. The third one, it's where the series goes real off the rails. It's fun in a schlocky sort of way, whereas the first two, I think, are legitimately some really tremendous, psychosexual horror films.
Right.
But the third one, go look it up. CD Man is what the fans call him. But yeah, he literally shoots CDs out of his mouth to try and kill you.
Wild. Perfect.
What a deep commentary.
Exactly.
Before there was Black Mirror, there was Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Oh man. Yeah, he's got a good face. All right, cool.
Search for CD Man.
Yeah, this is real good. They just call him CD, I guess, on the fandom Hellraiser Wikia. That's what I'm looking at right now.
Hellraiser
5
is basically a riff on Silent Hill 2.
Oh, his mouth is a CD slot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
and
bad.
He, and his head has, it's like, bad. CDs embedded. He almost looks like, God, remember, the King Koopa, the Dennis, King Koopa?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
He does.
But he kind of has that going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
God. Anyway, I hope that the communities that follow in the wake of NeoGAF can have conversations like these, but also ones that do tackle harder issues and do have space for that sort of interrogation of some harder stuff. I'm looking at this Wikia. I need to get off this Wikia because I don't know
good.
What any of these.
This is good healing. You know, we talked about something very difficult and very worthwhile talking about. And then you're also allowed to do
some
healing.
Bad Cenobites.
And now exactly. It says Pinhead's Gash here, and I don't know what that's referencing.
There it is.
Man, the last Hellraiser movie, two ones ago, where Lance Hendrickson runs a Hellraiser website.
What?
Log on to be killed.
Oh,
is it called
wow.
Hellworld or is it called Revelations?
Revelations is the most recent one, which is bad and doesn't have Doug Bradley as Hellraiser, so
what's Hellraiser Judgment? Oh, that's the next one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's another one coming out that also doesn't have Doug Bradley as Hellraiser, so
what's
get away from me. Yeah, but yeah, Hellworld is the video game Hellworld.
Okay.
Or Hellraiser. Okay. It's not good. I mean, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
But it's not good.
Have you looked at the image of the blood pack from Blade 2 recently?
I saw this mentioned in a different Discord. I did not interrogate it. Blade 2, 1
is a good fucking movie. Yes. 2, if you do a search, a Google image search for Blood Pack Blade 2, you just get the most, like, 1999 looking, like, all black leather everything. That movie came out in 2002.
I loved Blade. Oh my god, I loved too. That movie. That like a opening scene in the club. God damn, that was like.
I think the first
that was
Blade
John
movies.
Wick before John Wick.
Oh yeah, yep. absolutely. Fuck, I love Blade so much. I love. Why don't they make a good new Blade movie? Why was there never a good Blade game?
Yeah, you got anyway. All the parts. Like
this is, I'm gonna keep falling down. Yeah, exactly.
You got all you the got, parts. I mean, come on.
Everything you would ever want from Blade is in video games already.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's true.
There are, like, special vampires you fight who could be good boss fights.
Blade immersive sim. Come on, Arcane.
Or just, like, I mean, like, here's the actual problem is we talked about New York Witcher. Blade is literally already New York Witcher.
Yeah, yep.
Like, already. It's just Blade. Oh,
it's
man.
True.
God.
That's real good.
I think that's probably going to do it for us. Yeah. We don't have time for questions. We've already gone longer than we intended to today. It's been a long day.
Yeah, but we'll revisit this stuff on Friday. So if people have questions and we'll see, it'd be nice to give us some separation from everything. You know, we'll see where it goes. You know, I'm not super interested in like following all the machinations of where this goes from here. Yep. I feel like we kind of set our piece. But if people have like questions about like maybe the larger sort of stories of this, like, you know, like the story of like a death of a community and it was your community. Right. Like if there are stuff like that that's happened to you out there, I'm sure that's stuff that we can kind of meditate on Friday.
Friday's also going to be a wild one because it's October 27th.
Oh, boy.
Oh, fuck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Mario. Mario that day.
And Assassin's Creed.
Wolfenstein.
It is going to be a wild one.
I might actually be able to do some Assassin's Creed streaming tomorrow, believe
Ooh.
It or not.
Ooh.
I need to double check the streaming embargo on that, but yeah, tomorrow's the 24th, right?
Yep.
Yeah, true. At noon tomorrow I can do some streaming of Assassin's Creed.
I should be able to do stuff with Mario on Friday. So,
awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
Looking forward to talking about that.
Look forward to all that this week. It is gonna be a big one for everyone. So that sounded way more ominous than I intended it to be. This week's going to be a big one.
Well, you know, Pinhead's Gash. You know, I'm looking into this now, and Pinhead's Gash is going to be a big one. So.
Oh, okay. Cool. Great.
I might have to watch Hellraiser 3 tonight.
I might, actually.
Jesus Christ. All right. I am going to go eat food for the first time today. That's my plan. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker or probably maybe at the diner in my neighborhood. I don't know what I'm going to eat.
Get some diner food.
I want to go for a walk. I want to like go get my head clear after all this.
I'm getting on an ambulance after this. So, you know.
Jesus.
Be,
go help people. Nice. Have fun. Patrick, where can people find you besides an ambulance, Danielle?
At Danielle RI on Twitter.
Awesome. And Patrick, what about you?
You can find me at Patrick Klepek.
You can find everything we do at waypointadvice.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. Follow us over on Facebook at facebook.com/waypointvice. I said this on a stream, I think, earlier today, but even if you barely go on Facebook, go on Facebook and follow us. That sounds like silly, but it does actually help. The algorithm is a mysterious god. It is hard to understand how it works. But the thing I do know is, like in video games, it works better if the number goes up. So go like us over on Facebook if you enjoy the show. Seriously, it will help. Other than that, you can find everything we do all week on all the places I already said. So look forward to that. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. If you do have questions to send in about anything we talked about today, you can send them over to gaming@vice.com. And shout outs to Danielle, who's going to edit this today, I think.
Oh, so, yeah.
Shout outs
again
to
Danielle. I'm your podcast producer today, kids.
Hell yeah. And double shout outs again to the mods, the great Waypoint community mods over at our forums and on our Discord. That's going to do it. Danielle, what do we say to them?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace. Rob's not here today, so he can't fuck it up. Peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.